Michael Spath from Kapnick Insurance, you are the coolest small business insurance guy out there. You're not just sitting behind a desk studying the latest rates and, you know, newest programs and so on. You're going into the field. You love small business. That's what makes you really good at this, I think. You're genuinely passionate about it. And you just had the opportunity to go to South by Southwest as an insurance guy. Who does that?
Yeah, I mean, I think my boss at Kapnick was trying to understand the rationale for me to go down to South by Southwest. He thought I was just going down there to party for a week on the company dollar, which I certainly had a good time.
Nothing wrong with that.
I drank really well. I went to see a lot of live music, but I went down there to scout because, you know, my vertical is technology. Yeah. And the first couple of days of South by Southwest were a lot of technology companies, startups that were pitching their ideas. And, you know, when I went down there, there were a couple different places that I went to, but one of them was a place called the Midwest House. And one of the pitches I came across was from Dre Wallace, who is here with us today from the Grand Rapids area. And she has this really cool business called Opener that we're going to talk about. And when I told Dre earlier this, like, I probably saw 40 pitches when I was down there. And I walked away and I kind of have like my cheat sheet, right? Of like, here are the top five I really loved. Like, these are the ones that I want to help out in any way I can. Even if there's no insurance opportunities, I just want to help them if I can. And Opener was right at the top of my list. So when I was down there, like I said, Dre Wallace, and she was telling a story of essentially, you know, as in working in the music field as a producer, and how many venues out there right now do live music? So many of them throughout the state of Michigan.
Thank God it's coming back.
Yeah, and I think when a lot of these states outlawed smoking, they needed some other hook to get people to come out on a Tuesday night and a Wednesday night, and a lot of them turned to live music. The problem is, how many times have you been into a place and you're expecting some live music and there just isn't any live music, right? And like, because there's a disconnect. And one of the things I heard Dre talk about, and she can much more eloquently than I can, is explain how, you know, there's a lot of spaces to fill. And what she has created is an opportunity to connect musicians with venues to fill all of those slots.
Yeah. Dre.
Hello.
Pleased to have you. Hey, good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
What a cool business. First, tell us in your own words what Opener is.
Absolutely. I have this pitch down.
I'll bet you do. I'll bet you do. And it's obviously effective.
Yeah, so Opener is a technology platform that basically uses data to pair up independent musicians with opening slot opportunities. And, you know, it really kind
for
of
live
brings,
shows.
Yeah. So it brings together these two audiences of musicians and venues slash promoters or concert organizers, depending on what they call themselves. But it gives them like a marketplace to sort of meet in the middle.
Yeah. Intuitively, I love this idea, but set the stage for us, if you will, no pun intended.
No pun intended.
It was not intended. It just kind of happened. But those are the best ones. Anyway, Dre, there must be an issue. You're obviously addressing a need. There must be an issue with opportunities missed on both sides. Oh, actually, on three sides. For the venue, for the audience, and for those bands and artists that could be performing and, you know, gaining recognition and awareness and marketing opportunities and so on. Tell us about first the problem that you're addressing.
On the musician side, it's full of problems. Like, mostly they want those opening slot opportunities because they do really mean something. Like, I know they mean
they
something
do.
Because
yeah.
it happened to me. So, like, I have a personal story there. But they're looking for those opening slot opportunities, but usually how they get them is just by annoying the hell out of whoever the venue manager is, whoever the promoter is. Like, so sending emails, they usually also don't present that great because musicians are busy working on music. They're not busy being a marketing master, you know? So, like, it really, like, they have a hard time trying to even get those slots or even knowing whether or not they're available because you kind of need to know somebody.
Yep.
Then on the promoter and venue side, I mean, especially what's happening right now because we're live music is sort of back, but like there's a lot of stuff that's going on. So some of these venues who maybe before had a staff of 15 people to do things, they're now running on razor thin margins.
So even more is getting missed.
Yeah. Yes. And so now like what you might have had 15 people doing, you might have 3 people doing. So their margins are razor thin, but also they don't present that great either. You know, like in terms of like a venue presenting themselves as a great place for musicians to play, they kind of feel like they don't have to do that much, you know?
Yeah.
So there's definitely some issues on both sides, but like what Opener does is to remedy those two things. Like really on the musician side, they can kind of just create this profile that pulls in all of their relevant information. So whether it's social media stuff or like the streaming platforms, all of those pulls it all into one view, makes it look really, really nice, presents professionally. That is something that the now promoters will actually look at, and they can kind of sit back and relax like after they've done that. And then on the promoter side, they do the same thing. They also create a profile that helps them present professionally, lets people know what the venue is, where it is, what the capacity is, all those things. And then they can post show opportunities. And so when they post that opportunity, there's a bunch of criteria that they can put in there of what they're looking for. And so what happens is when they post it, it automatically will send an alert to all the musicians that are signed up on the platform already. And if they are eligible and fit the criteria for that opportunity, they'll get an alert and it'll say, hey, you fit the criteria for this new show that's available. Like, would you like to submit for it? And yeah, if they're like, yeah, cool, I definitely want to submit, then they just hit the submit button. And then what they get back is a special link that we call, it's a feature in the platform called Fan Claim. And they can press a button, that stuff automatically goes out to all of their social platforms. And then their following, their fans can claim whether or not they will support, you know, this opening act, you know, for the show. And so we actually get all of that contact information for the fan base as well. And so one of the things that we can do when we actually pull the trigger on our business model in a couple months will be to allow those promoters and venues to actually be able to market to this captive audience of people who already said they'll go to the show. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's really easy to fill opening slot opportunities when you are throwing like 50 shows. Like, that's easy to do. You can just probably flip through your phone and do that.
Right.
But when you're doing like 300 shows a year, 400, 500, 600, 700 shows a year, it becomes a very different situation, and it's really difficult to fill those.
There were a lot of things that Dre explained, but, you know, there's one entity here who is not going to be on the hook for pain, and that's the musician side. And because how many of these musicians, and Jeff, you've got friends that are musicians, I've got friends that are musicians, you know, family that are musicians, and especially when they're getting themselves going, it's not like they've got this treasure trove of wealth that they're coming from, right? Like, getting a gig is often, I mean, it's not necessarily maybe paying the bills, or maybe it's paying some. So Dre is making this affordable by making it free to all the musicians. I think that's awesome, because she's connecting them and providing this amazing service to them and not asking for anything back from them.
Yeah.
That was a decision we made long ago, that like we just would never charge the musicians, because one, they don't, like you said, they don't have the money, but also the thing is, they would find the money if we did charge them. Like, to me, that's like the easy out, is to charge the musician, because like musicians will pay anything like for an edge. Like, they'll definitely do it. There are platforms who do that today, and there's a reason why, like, now 10 years later, some of those platforms like SonicBids like just aren't doing as well, because you have all these musicians who pay, you know, $20 to submit for a show, $100 to submit for a festival, $200 to submit for this, and then they just don't get any, like, they never get selected. So, like, now they're out of the cash.
Right.
And they don't have a show.
Right.
Like, it's just, make any sense.
Yeah.
Let me tell you this, too. So, when I was down in Texas, when I was down in Austin, and Dre mentioned that she's pre-revenue, but this is, you know, this is something that when she gets ready to become revenue, I think she's going to do very well for herself. And I was thinking to myself, like, okay, it's a company out of Grand Rapids. They probably got a couple local bookings and the whole thing. They were filling spots down in Austin. They are filling spots in Colorado. They're filling spots in Chicago. They're filling spots in Nashville. They're filling spots in Detroit. Like, this is a business that has already gained a lot of momentum.
It's in market. It's validated.
Yeah, and these businesses across the country. Like, this is not it is a mom and pop, but it has the ability to go everywhere, because, and that's the thing about being a software website, right? Like, you're not limited. If you're a brick and mortar, well, you're not getting someone from California unless they're on vacation to come into your place. This goes everywhere.
Everywhere. Even internationally.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the plan.
I think it's going to happen. And when did you release the first, I mean, you mentioned Colorado and here and there, you're doing business now. When was this first released into the market?
First released in 2019, then came COVID
the 2020. Pandemic, right.
Ruined everyone's life.
Right. No live shows.
Yep. And then sort of like, you know, once things started open up again last year, like basically relaunched everything last summer.
Tell us about your personal background. You know, how did you, what led you to becoming, everyone's always curious about the human aspect of this, you know, the person behind the business that made it all happen.
I'm definitely a music lover. I've been playing instruments since I was like 4. I was in jazz band, concert band, symphony, marching bands. It's always been like such a huge part of my life. It's probably been the most consistent thing, like, really in my life. Like, I didn't do sports because I was doing so much music. So, it's just always been like a part of my life, and I didn't know what I was going to do with it, but I knew I was going to do something. I just didn't know what it was going to be. Like, honestly, I didn't even, if someone told me when I was like in high school that I would have ended up like a touring musician, I would have been like, no. I studied music in college, but I was also a business major. I had a double major. Like, after I graduated from school, like, I just, you know, I was always working on music, but I then, like, got more into technology and just, like, was a self-taught developer. So I just hope that this is something that can help people. I hope, like, musicians can take some power back, get some shows, make some cash.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And, you know, because they're the product. And,
sure.
Like, we're just really hoping that they can, you know, get what they deserve.
Well, and so she's filling an incredible need and a niche, and then she can make $1 billion, too. That's the goal.
Maybe
a couple million dollars. So someone's probably wondering a little bit, you know, I go down to Texas, I go to South by Southwest. And then how do I look at a business like what Dre is doing here? Is so again, she is not, the brick and mortar restaurant, retail space, the whole thing, but she has 3 unique potential exposures. So like I look at every business, I'm listening to her. I want to talk to people. I want to get to know them. I want to hear what they're all about because I don't want to make any prejudgments. I don't want to go in there and try to sell to somebody right away. And like, well, you need this, this, and this. There's a lot of agents out there that do that. They're just trying to make a commission.
Absolutely. You're trying to figure out what really the needs are and what the right fit is.
She's got 3. She has 3. She's talking about getting an outside investment right now. And so a lot of, especially if she gets it from particular investors, if she gets it from if she has a Kickstarter or something like that, it's a little bit different. But if she gets it from, you know, primary investors who are putting $100,000 here, a couple $100,000 there, those investors are going to want to know that if anything goes south, they're going to be indemnified. They're going to get an opportunity to get their money back.
Sure.
And so directors and officers insurance essentially protects people like Dre so that if they decide, hey, I want my money back, or I don't think you've run this business the way that I thought it was going to run, they're not going after her from a personal assets place. They're not telling her to sell her house. They're not telling her to liquidate her 401k, things like that, so they get paid back. The insurance part takes care of that. So that's one part that she needs.
Oh, this is good to know. Oh my God.
Get it out the notes. The second part is her biggest liability is, you know, errors and omissions, E&O, which is, again, she's not... General liability handles if someone walks into Startup Nation, trips over the ice, falls down, gets hurt, you know, or if you have a product, a physical product that breaks and they, you know, cut somebody's mouth, something like that. That's what general liability. She doesn't have that. Her product is software. If her software fails for whatever reason and it leads to a financial loss for either side, the musicians or for the concert venues, then they could, again, hold her responsible if the software doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so then she needs to be covered for that. And then the big thing she said, too, is they're collecting personal information from these fans.
Yeah.
And personal information is the biggest, buzziest, trendiest thing out there. Personal information, credit cards, addresses, you know, when you get into the health sector. So cybersecurity, which we talked about in the last podcast, so incredibly important. Cyber insurance, have that because anything goes wrong. You know, as we said, I mean, that is the burning your business down to the ground, right?
Right,
like then you just
disappear.
You've ceased to exist. So I always listen to someone and I say, okay, those are 3 things. I'll talk about it with the prospect, with the client. You can say no to me. You can say yes to me. I'll just present it to them. I'm just here to act as counsel and advice. As we always like to say, like we sit on the same side of the table as you. We're not trying to sell you and going like, you know, and taking you to task. We're literally here to offer you counsel and to help you be protected because you've spent so much time and effort on building your business up. We just want to give you that peace of mind to know that you're protected if anything goes south.
And I think that value add that comes with you providing that kind of guidance, that's everything. Because it's really not about, I mean, for you guys, it's about sales to a degree. You're running your business, you're selling it something, but it's of real value to the entrepreneur. When the need comes along, you better have it. And so it's a thank you to the guy or the lady that, you know, steered me in the right direction to make sure I protect myself. And so we appreciate that very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let's finish with Dre, because Dre is the reason we're here. Openermusic.com is the website.
And it's Opener, O-P-N-R, right?
O-P-N-R.
Yeah, I just had a conversation with someone the other day, and I kept on telling like, take the E's out. And they're like, what do you mean take the E's out? I'm like, OPNR, take the E's out of opener. Yeah,
it's cool.
And if you're a musician, if you're a concert, you know, venue, if you're a fan, check them out. What'd you tell me? You're 12,000 active.
Yep, we've got like 12,000 active users. We've got over 7,000 independent musicians across the country signed up. We've got about a little over 400 concert promoters and venues across the country signed up. It's free to sign up today, so like you can literally make an account today if you want to. So check it out.
Very cool. Michael, thank you for bringing in such a great story.
Hey, thank you to Dre for impressing the hell out of me.
The story's only going to get better.
I can't wait to follow it, man.
Yeah, it's really cool. Thank you. Dre, thanks for coming on, sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah.
Michael, thank you, and best of luck to you, Dre, as you go forward.
Another person who I met at the South by Southwest Festival down in Austin, Texas, back in March was Christine White. And I walked away from that South by Southwest with a lot of prospects, with a lot of people that I wanted to get to know. But the one is a father. This one really spoke to me as a parent. And for all the parents out there, I think you're going to get a big kick out of that. And that is Imagine Chat. And it's founder, it's CTO, it's everything, Christine White. Christine, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So give a little bit of a background on what is Imagine Chat. Because if I do it, I'm going to be like, well, it's an interactive platform for your child. So essentially almost have like an imaginary friend that they are talking to on their phone. How well did I do?
Actually, not bad. That's essentially the gist of it. But Imagine Chat is a FaceTime video chat style-esque platform for kids in their early ages. About 3 to 7 is what we are working with right now, for them to have an interactive and responsive video chat with fairy tale and superhero characters. Dialogues include anything from happy birthday to being sad or being anxious, and really learning how to name and explore their emotions in a way that's, you know, meaningful and interactive. So that's pretty much what we're doing.
So when you say interactive, are we talking like, okay, they're watching a video of a kid, or is this really like, my son's name is John, like he can say, hey, superhero, and the superhero will take the audible cues and the things that my son says and have an actual conversation with them?
Correct. So it's not something that they're just watching, that your child is, it's not like the Santa apps where it doesn't matter what your kid is saying. This is more very interactive. So whatever the kid is saying, there are responses, pre-recorded responses that the characters will be able to say. So the kid really feels like that they're connecting with somebody who's, they trust, somebody that they know, like Cinderella, or, you know, we have original characters, but also the characters that you know in the public domain, such as Cinderella or the Tooth Fairy. And, you know, people that they've grown up, we trust those characters because we grew up with them too, and our grandparents grew up with them. So it's just something, someone that they already know, and it's putting it out there for them to actually talk to them and interact with them.
I think it's really cool because my son has the whole Peppa Pig family.
Yep.
And I mean, you know, he has a great imagination, but he has like, he'll talk to Peppa Pig. And the one thing that Peppa Pig doesn't do is talk back.
Right.
And so now here's this opportunity that he could talk to Peppa. Maybe he could talk to Thomas the Train down the road, or he could talk to Bluey, or he could talk to, like, you know, like I'm trying to think of like all my sons. I mean, some of his Lego friends and the whole thing. And like those are obviously down the road conversations. But as a conversation lasts 5 minutes, I mean, could your child theoretically do it for an hour?
So right now the conversations essentially last about 3 minutes or so.
Okay.
But down the road we do have plans on expanding that to more open dialogue. So my daughters love to just FaceTime with their grandparents, and then they will set the phone down on, you know, in their playroom, and then they will just play with their grandparents. But, you know, this is different because, again, it's Cinderella or superhero character or something, and it's on demand. So, you know, you don't have to wait, like, are my grandparents home from work yet?
Right.
Or is, you know, is Auntie available to talk? You know, these characters in this app will always be readily available for your kids to play with. Again, like, kids just want to feel connected. They just want to feel heard and understood. And, you know, my daughter, my oldest daughter just turned 6 the other day, and she's in that whole phase of, you know, being sassy, but also she's starting to become her own person. And while she listens to me, she's a, you know, wonderful kid. She's also, you know, in that stage where she doesn't just want to talk to me. I'm not the only person who in her life who can calm her down or who can, you know, make her feel good about herself. If she's having a great day, I'm not the only person that she wants to tell. You know, if she did really well on a presentation in kindergarten that day, she wants to call everyone she knows, including, because, you know, they've had access to the app for a while, including Ninja Zoom or Cinderella or our mermaid character. She wants to tell everybody. And these characters for her have really become a part of her daily life. She's seen like the behind the scenes, and she's still able to kind of suspend her reality and know that and believe in this magic that she is actually talking to somebody. Even my three-year-old, same thing. She's become, you know, she's still at the age where she doesn't have to necessarily suspend reality. Everything is still very magical for her. The first time I let her use the app, because now she can talk better and, you know, it more articulate, so it would work better for her. She now, I mean, every day wants to talk to Cinderella or whoever it is, like whichever character that day she wants to talk to. And it's always, you know, she wants to talk about her school friends. She wants to talk about what happened that day. And it's just really incredible seeing this unfold for my kids. And I can't wait to see how this unfolds for other kids too.
So I was curious, where are you in the process? You've got beta testing coming up.
Correct.
You're not in revenue yet. You're pre-revenue. What do the next couple months look like for you and Imagine Chat?
Sure. So the next couple months, we are gearing up, like you said, for beta testing. Beta testing includes, right now we have about 50 families who are in our beta testing. We're hoping to get about 100 more into the beta testing. But
John will volunteer.
Yes, absolutely. Come on down. But we are getting gearing up for beta testing. Beta testing will last hopefully about 3 months or less. And once we collect the KPIs, the key performance indicators, you know, seeing how often the kids are using the app, which characters they enjoy talking to, which dialogues they are spending more time with, we will hopefully be in seed funding by summertime.
Okay. And is there anything, I mean, for those people listening out there today, is there anything that you need?
That's what they always testers.
I always said, you know, where I met you was at a pitch event. And so this is kind of like a little bit of a pitch. So you need beta testers.
I do. I need, again, like we need about maybe 100 more kids to be in our beta testing.
Well, I got 5 for you. Okay. Not all of mine. Yeah. My nieces and nephews. I got 5 for you.
All right. We will get them in. But yeah, it's really easy. Beta testing, it's the time commitment is less than 15 minutes a week.
Okay.
In the beginning, you know, as the parent or the caregiver, you will kind of need to be more involved so that you can kind of help your kid lead the discussions with the character.
Okay.
But once your kid kind of gets the hang of, and you yourself, you know, you feel comfortable, because I know a lot of issues with the parents are they're a lot always worried about their child's privacy, right? Mm-hmm. So just so you know, we don't record anything. We're not recording the interactions. We're not recording what your kid is saying, what Cinderella is saying. Right now, it's just something that, you know, as parents, we feel comfortable letting our kids talk to somebody, knowing that their voices and their what they're saying isn't being recorded.
Okay. So you need 94 more beta testers. Mm-hmm. What's the best way to reach out to you?
Sure. You can email me at christine@imagine.chat, but that's spelled C-H-R-I-S-T-I-E-N. At imagine.chat.
Just flip the E and the N.
Yep, exactly.
From the way that you would think to spell Christine.
Exactly.
I love that it's a little bit different, a little bit unique.
My dad spelled it wrong on my birth certificate, and I never changed it.
So there's not like a whole I wanted to. It was just that. I love that. That's a great.
I went in for my driver's license when I was 16, and, you know, you have to give them your birth certificate.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. And I'm like, okay.
Wait, you had no idea? You weren't spelling them wrong? You weren't spelling it that way throughout your life?
No, I'm sure they had it in my, like, in schools, but they probably thought that they had it wrong on their end, so they flipped it around, and it was just...
That's great.
It was just always like that, and I kind of got chewed out 1 year for, you know, I have to spell it the way that it's legally spelled and not the way I felt like it that day.
From an insurance standpoint, and Christine, this is where, you know, we would fit in, and so we talked about it. You know, cyber, Obviously, you know, if you're collecting any information about the child or the family, even their name, you know, phone number, address, stuff like that. I mean, we'd want to put those safeguards in place so that, you know, if ransomware, if there's a cyber attack or anything like that, and they get in access and they have access, we'd want to protect you from the cyber front of that. And then the other one is, you know, down the road, if you sell to, you know, Montessori schools, daycares, child development, anything like that, and for whatever reason the software doesn't work, you know, errors and omissions insurance essentially covers your liability when your software doesn't work. I always tell people, this is what we do, is I listen to the story the entire time. We don't come into it saying 100% this is what you're going to need, I'm going to try to force something on you. We listen to every potential client, and then we say, like, okay, based off of what I've heard from you, here's a couple things we need to talk about, and it's all up to you. We don't make you buy anything. We let you pick what makes sense for you, and we find the coverage limit and the premium that works best for every single budget out there. So that is what we do at Kapnick Insurance. Joining me here today is the president of our specialty risk department. That's Doug Miller, who is going to talk about professional liability insurance and E&O insurance. And you know, you mentioned small businesses, and obviously, depending on your small business, depending on what you do, you have you know, certain insurance needs. And one of the ones what we run into, Doug, a lot is like, okay, if I'm an attorney, I have my own practice, or I'm an accountant, and certainly about a month ago or back in April when taxes were due and the accountants were super busy, and they've got, you know, maybe you've got hundreds of clients or thousands of clients, consultants that whether it's, you know, engineering or whether it's ecological or anything like that, that consultants are working with a different type of insurance, and it's called professional liability insurance. And so could you just give a little bit of a framework of the difference between general liability and professional liability?
Yeah, sure. Good question. Good topic. I think the main thing when you're differentiating between general liability, which most people understand intuitively, that's sort of your bodily injury, property damage scenario. So in the context of your daily life, like a slip and fall, something breaks, property is destroyed, damaged, or rendered unusable. Professional liability is more, think of more of sort of the financial loss that, and typically when I think of it, I think of financial loss to customers. So if you're a firm and you're selling, in particular, you're selling a service, maybe not a tangible product per se, but a service, what would happen if your customer alleges that that service that you provided was somehow deficient, bad, not what they bargained for, and it in fact caused them some type of financial harm, and they came back after you alleging you were negligent in providing that service? That's really kind of the way to think about it.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the general liability, because I run into a lot of clients who say, like, hey, you know, I'm doing consulting work with a company, and they've asked me for, do I have general liability insurance, $1 million or something like that? And I always say, yeah, we can write that, but what you really need is professional. Why is there a disconnect? Why do a lot of, you know, you're going to sign a client contract, they ask for GL, when what you really need to protect yourself is the professional side?
Yeah, I think especially for smaller and startup organizations, the professional could be even more important than the general liability. If you think about it, they have limited balance sheets, limited amount of funds available to protect themselves in the event that they're sued. They're just starting out, so they're developing new customers. If they have sophisticated large customers, just think about the scenario where that customer may have deep pockets, ability to come after you legally for something that, and it may not even be true, it may just be an allegation that your product or service was deficient. But just protecting yourself from a customer that you don't fully know, understand yet, and you're just starting off with, not to mention the fact that your product or service is probably in sort of a beta phase anyway. There's some risk with that, obviously. So I think for a lot of startup organizations in particular, it's something to consider, and perhaps probably even more important at the end of the day than general liability. General liability is sort of a throw-in coverage with a what we call a business package policy. It's pretty inexpensive, and it's pretty common. So most people understand that and are used to that. But what they're not used to is this whole professional liability space and like you alluded to, it can vary pretty dramatically in terms of what type of service or product you're selling in the first place. And so the underwriting varies pretty dramatically depending on that as well.
Yeah, and I always tell people, like, someone asked me, like, you know, well, what type of company needs professional liability? And I say, well, to what you said earlier, Doug, if you're providing a service with and less of a product, right? I mean, a product, you know, we're sitting on chairs right now. That's a product. We're sitting at a table with a desk in front of us. That's right. A product. But if you're doing consulting work, that is a service. And again, if a client ends up saying, like, you created a financial loss, your general liability is not going to cover that. Your professional that covers the service that you're providing is going to ultimately cover, not only if you are found liable, but it's going to cover those defense costs too.
Yeah, the defense costs is very important. So a lot of times these types of lawsuits are frivolous or they're questionable. Maybe the customer is just mad or is not 100% satisfied, but is very aggressive from a legal perspective and comes after you with a lawsuit, essentially. Cost to defend yourself against those types of claims, even if you have no liability and there is no settlement at the end of the day, or if you wish to fight it in court, those defense costs can be pretty expensive. If you think about the tangible product manufacturer, the chair example, what could happen with the chair? Well, it could break. I could hurt myself. I could fall off of it. It may not work the way it's supposed to. Those are more of sort of bodily injury, property damage related type of matters.
Yeah, I'm sitting the one that we're sitting in, it's got rollers on it. So those things are always, always dangerous here.
That's right.
Doug, earlier in the podcast, we spoke to Dre Wallace of Opener, and she has this great company where she connects musicians, a lot of similar like startup companies, right? Musicians that are not out there on the Billboard Music Awards or, they're not the ones at the Grammys, right? They're not, fan label, all these, they're not the big timers yet. They're trying to get their name out there. And she's trying to connect those musicians with the venues who honestly, the venues probably don't have problems filling their Friday and Saturday night spaces, but they have problems filling their Tuesday and Wednesday and sometimes Thursday night spaces or Sunday afternoon spaces. And so she's trying to connect them together. And so she's created this software platform. And this is another type of professional liability, errors and omissions coverage. We call it tech E&O. And that's the software now becomes the product or now becomes the service.
Right, right. And in that case, so think of the things that could go wrong, I guess, is the way that you can start to imagine what the risk is. So perhaps there's many levels of things that could go wrong. The software could infringe on somebody else's copyright for software that's already out there, for example. And that's probably the most severe exposure that they may have. The software could simply not work the way it was designed or the way it was sort of quote-unquote advertised to the venues or the musicians. In that case, there's going to be a disconnect between the two parties and there's going to be some kind of problem that may result in some kind of financial harm to one or the other parties, right? So those are probably the two main areas of risk from that type of service. And that's more than just a service. It's an actual piece of software that provides a service and they're licensing it or selling that presumably to the venues in this case.
Yeah. I mean, they're selling it to the venues. There's a couple other pieces of it that Dre talked about, including selling customer information to the venues so that, fans of these bands can track them and wherever they go, they can track them to Lansing. They can track them to Detroit or Grand Rapids or Traverse City, and the venues are then having ownership of, information about those customers. And so, there's, again, like if that software fails and like, well, I've bought, maybe I've spent a couple thousand dollars on access to 500 fans and your software's not giving me, is not working. Well, then what did I pay for type of thing? I want my money back type of thing.
Right. And if you can't work that out commercially with the seller of the software, a lot of times that can lead to litigation risk, or not even litigation, but perhaps an attorney demand letter, which would typically trigger a claim under these professional liability policies. So, for that type of scenario, that type of example, professional liability, or in this case, tech E&O, that would cover that, particularly that software copyright infringement risk, would be important.
Yeah, I think about them in terms of tech, you know, I think about them in terms of software, I think about them in terms of servers, I think about them in terms of applications on phones. You know, back in the 10 years ago, we'd kind of joke about apps, but now there's an app for everything. A lot of them in this fintech space that are handling financial information. You know, I don't know where you do your banking, but I do my banking on my phone through an application. And so any of those things, again, those are where the tech E&O space, our liability kicks in.
Yeah, and I think you raised another set of issues which might touch on privacy and cyber liability risk, which is often a companion coverage to the professional liability. For professional liability, we think of what can a customer come after us over? So it would typically be something that caused the customer financial harm. Privacy, cyber liability would be the scenario with whether it's apps or sharing of location data or collecting personal data of users. That falls a little bit more into the cyber side of things, but oftentimes those two types of policies are bought in tandem.
Doug, final for you. Everybody always asks, we get asked about this all the time. Jeff asks me all the time, what is this going to cost someone? And I always kind of give a standard answer, a little bit of like, well, it depends on a couple of things. I'm not going to say, hey, it's going to be $1,000 or it's going to be $10,000. But what are those things that the underwriters are going to be considering when they're looking at either a professional liability policy or a tech E&O policy? What are some of the factors that are going into determining that premium?
I'd say the main underwriting factor is, frankly, the volume of business or projected volume of business. And if you think about that, that makes sense. So the more you sell, the more customers you have, and the more customer risk you have. So basically your revenue. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of startups, it's actually projected revenue because they may not have a lot of revenue in year one. So first year projected revenue. The more you sell, the more, again, the more customers you have, the larger amount of exposure you have in terms of the product or service that you're selling. So that I would say that's the number one rating factor. And then falls into what type of product or service. So if it's software versus management consulting, software may be a little bit more expensive because of the copyright angle. Whereas if you're just consulting your business management consultant, you don't really have copyright risk, for example. So that might be less, relatively speaking.
Well, it sounds very technical. I think we try to do our best to break it down. Here's the good news is that if you find yourself in one of these careers, if you run your own business or you're in a management position of a business such as this, a consulting, an accountant, an attorney, or you're in the technology space, you're a software designer, you're an application designer, things of that nature, you can reach out to us at capnic.com and we can take you through it, lead you through every step. And I think the thing that is really important, Doug, is serving as that counselor who is just going to present, you know, all the coverages, all of what we think based off of the conversation we have, you need. At the same time, it always comes down to what the customer wants.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think our job is not to sell insurance. It's to advise clients about business issues and emerging business issues. And insurance is just one of those issues.
All right. Thanks, Doug.